Hello and welcome to this week's Liverpool Live podcast. I'm Alex Gorton and I'm going to be bringing you all of the main news stories from Liverpool this week, plus a roundup of the latest sports headlines and what's going on in the city. Coming up, we have your thoughts on whether there should be a new stand at Goodison Park in tribute to Howard Kendall.
He's a legend of the city, isn't he? You know, Howard Kendall, he has been. He's like sort of equivalent to Shankly in a lot of ways, you know.
Also, we spoke with counter-extremist terrorism expert David Lowe on his thoughts on the Prime Minister's new strategy and what else can be done to combat terrorism.
I think you've got to revisit the Prevent Strand of the Contest programme, that's the counter-terrorism programme, and look at this channel programme which is helping to de-radicalise them. I think that needs revisiting and perhaps some more finances being put into that.
And I went to the Telegraph Cruise and Travel Show last weekend and spoke to the show manager to find out what it was all about.
Well, the aim of the show is it's an opportunity for people who are inspired by cruising or by travel, or just, you know, generally want some ideas about what to do for their holiday. So it's an opportunity for people to come to a place where all of that is under one roof.
But first, following the news of the death of former Everton manager Howard Kendall, a petition was launched to name a stand after him. Our news reporter Laura Gilchrist visited Goodison Park.
Yeah, I'm outside Goodison Park, one of Liverpool's most famous football grounds. I'm just here standing outside the Dixie Dean statue that was put here a few years ago. There's lots and lots of tributes, flowers, different heartfelt messages for Howard Kendall. And I came down to Goodison just to see if there was anyone willing to talk to me about what he meant to them and whether, you know, there should be a new stand in tribute to him. So we'll see what they have to say.
I think it would be a good thing. I mean, Everton are well known for doing things like that. They look after the local people and the customers.
Well, he's a legend of the city, isn't he? You know, Howard Kendall, he has been. He's like sort of equivalent to Shankly in a lot of ways, you know. So, I think it should be should be something to support him. You know, I mean, they changed John Lennon Airport to, you know, Speke Airport to John Lennon. So we do celebrate our local heroes. So I think it would be a good thing for it.
Yeah. I support Liverpool, but I think it would be a good idea. You've done a lot for them. Good manager. Yeah, give him a statue as well. He's got a plaque, give him a statue.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea. He's had a good legacy at Everton. He's contributed a lot to the history, and it should be a foregone conclusion that they make a stand for him.
That was our reporter, Laura Gilchrist, getting people's reaction on whether a stand should be named in tribute to Howard Kendall.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
David Cameron announced this week that he will invest £5 million in new counter-extremism strategies. The funding will be dedicated to anti-extremism projects in communities. Projects will include social media training and technical assistance to enable small charities to set up websites. It will tackle online attempts to radicalise the vulnerable. An existing scheme for passports to be removed from under 16-year-olds will now be widened to include 16 and 17-year-olds. The scheme is for parents who suspect their child may be planning to travel abroad to join terrorist groups. New measures also include people with a conviction or civil order for terrorism or extremism will be barred from working with children. Earlier, I spoke to David Lowe, a counter-terrorism expert who now lectures here at Liverpool John Walsh University, who told me this could put too much pressure onto parents.
I think it's got inherent problems because one of the issues is if you put something in a piece of statute and give someone a power, it's okay if you're dealing with the public services, for example, obviously the obvious ones, the police and so on. But asking members of a family to do something, that could be stretching, and I can see that's being potentially problematic because obviously some parents might find their children are being lured into this but would not want to suddenly take proceedings and have an official outcome on it, so I think it could be slightly flawed.
How do we stop extremist terrorism? What else does the government need to put in place to...
I think you've got to revisit the Prevent Strand of the Contest programme, that's the counter-terrorism programme, and look at this channel programme which is helping to de-radicalise them. I think that needs revisiting and perhaps some more finances being put into that. I think also The key to this is electronic communications, how groups like Islamic State are exploiting this through social media. Now, there's calls for wider powers of surveillance, and I can see the need for this, but if we do have it, it's essential that it's on specific grounds like countering terrorism or for serious crime like human trafficking, and we have the safeguards. So there's got to be independent supervision of authorities with the internet and service communication service providers, because they want to protect their customers' data, because if they don't, then they're not going to get the customers and they go out of business. So there has to be some dialogue between them and sort of work together rather than get a statutory big stick and try and beat these companies up. So it really needs a transnational response, because these are global. I mean, there's a case with Europe, but an Austrian signs up to Facebook that goes to the server in Ireland, but of course from server in Ireland goes off to California, and he thinks the NSA in the States looked at his material, and the court found for him. So it's a transnational issue. There are wider surveillance powers needed, but they've got to be specific and have safeguards.
So do you think the internet's one of the biggest problems for it? Is that where people are reaching out to these young people?
Yeah, I mean, because we saw that with a 15-year-old from Blackburn, who is now the youngest convicted terrorist in the UK. He never really left his bedroom, in effect. Yet he is there plotting with Australian counterparts to attack police officers on Anzac Day, and they were going to do it. He hadn't even been to Australia, never mind going to the likes of Iraq or Syria. He did that from his bedroom. He's been influenced by what he's seen and what he's read on the internet. And trust me, Islamic State in particular are very, very effective in how they lure people in. They use their social media as a portal to get people to look in, and then once they get you in deeper, there will be people who will be grooming young people towards either going to move to the region or to radicalise them to do something.
What do you think is fueling this extremist terrorism in young people?
I think you have an issue, because we look at the ages of what we've seen. A lot of, like, between 14 and 17, it looks exciting. I mean, you could be in a community where you do feel as though you don't have a future, and you think, well, you know, I can't see my future being in this country. I can't see where I'm going with this. And you look at this excitement that's going on, and certainly for young men, it does look an exciting life. But if you go to a region itself when you are being shot at, it's a completely different reality that kicks in. And obviously there are those who have returned, and there's some who've gone there and struggled to come to terms with it. It's been very, very difficult. I think the internet, you can't say the internet itself, it's people using it. Yeah. And what sources are there. And I think that's why I'll go back to the channel program part. I think it's really got to be revisited, reworked again, and show that, bring in role models from different communities to say, look, there is a future for you. You have a belonging in this country. This is what you can achieve, and that's one way to try and counter it, as well as wider powers of surveillance. It's, if you like, there are a lot of factors to take into consideration, yeah. Not just one.
Home Secretary Theresa May led a second reading debate in the House of Commons this week about the government's position on the Psychoactive Substances Bill. The bill will impose a blanket ban on legal highs and will distribute the market considerably. Our Liverpool Life reporter Noor Ali has more on the story.
A new law regarding psychoactive substances, also known as legal highs, is due to be enforced in 2016, but these substances are proving to be an increasing problem for UK paramedics. Legal high substances are designed to replicate the effects of illegal drugs, but they are chemically different enough to be legal by law. The government is attempting to crack down on legal highs, but this has proved to be challenging, as new versions are being cooked up frequently. In 2012 alone, the European Monitoring Centre for Drugs and Drug Addiction identified 73 new legal high substances. Deaths from legal highs in England and Wales almost doubled to 52 last year. Exact figures for legal high call-outs are hard to measure because emergencies are recorded by symptoms rather than the exact cause. This then makes it difficult to determine the exact emergency circumstance. We did a little more digging to find out some thoughts about legal highs being used more often.
I honestly don't think there's nothing wrong with them. I've took them myself, so I don't see the problem with them. Well, I personally don't think they should be legal anyway, because obviously a lot of people have died from them before, like the, you know, the balloons. And I think they're ridiculous that people sell them, because they sell them on corner shops and things, don't they?
Look, personally, I don't mind it, as long as it's in moderation and stuff, then I think that's fine, yeah. But obviously, everything has to be controlled, obviously, but yeah, I'm up for it.
That was Noor Ali reporting on what you think about legal highs.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
Last weekend, the Telegraph Cruise and Travel Show took place here in Liverpool. The event hosted at the new exhibition centre invited people to take a look at the most amazing cruise destinations. There was a range of different features at the show for visitors to enjoy throughout the day, from wine tasting and afternoon tea to a waterfront walk exploring the links between Cunard Cruise Line and Liverpool. Travel experts and Telegraph journalists hosted talks at the event. They gave their insight into their amazing travel experiences, giving people inspiration for possible cruise destinations. Monty Halls, former presenter of the BBC's Great Escape series, hosted a talk where he revealed all about his travels around the Galapagos Islands. I spoke with the show manager, who says one of the main objectives of the event was to attract those who are new to the cruise experience.
So another element of the show is about introducing new people to cruise. That's one of our biggest objectives, and we operate an impartial advice service for our customers. So CLIA, which is the Cruise Lines International Association for UK and Ireland, have their experts here, and you're able to book a one-to-one session with them to talk about what you like to do as a holiday, you know, whether it might be you're a beach family or you might actually like to go to quite colder climates, whether you're really active or whether you just like to slob out by the sea. And then they'll be able to talk to you about what you want out of your holiday and give you some pointers as to which cruise lines would be best for them. So it's a complete impartial personal advice purely based on your needs.
Yeah.
One of the most well-known features of the former Liverpool International Garden Festival site is to be dismantled. The Garden Festival was created in 1984. It was part of a regeneration scheme for the city in the wake of the Toxteth riots in 1981 and industrial decline. The International Garden Festival attracted around 3.4 million visitors with its mix of 60 ornamental gardens from all parts of the world. Stephen Carson has more.
The Upper Chinese Pagoda, now part of the festival garden site, has been fenced off to the public for almost a year because it was feared that ground movements in the mound on which it stands would cause it to collapse. Specialist contractors have now advised Liverpool City Council, who own the site, that to save the Upper Pagoda, it should be taken down completely to protect it from further damage. It will be removed by specialist contractors this month, and as many of the components as possible will be stored with a view for possible reuse in the future. The pagoda in the Chinese gardens was initially developed as a temporary feature, but has been in place for more than 30 years.
Now, let's take a look at this week's Sport Roundup with Kate Hewison.
Former Liverpool forward Raheem Sterling's agent Andy Ward has come out this week with claims that Brendan Rodgers is to blame for the departure of Sterling last summer. Sterling joined Manchester City in a £50 million deal in July after months of chasing a transfer. However, Ward, who is widely known for his controversial work as an agent, says the England international would have stayed under new man Klopp. Three key players from Roberto Martinez's Everton side made their comebacks from injury this week. Stephen Pienaar, Tom Cleverley and Brian Oviedo all returned for the Blues in an under-21 game against Shawk, which the boss claims is an important period for the team. In local boxing, two Merseyside boys have come home with the gold after excelling at last week's National Junior Development Championship finals in Rotherham. Salisbury Avery Seas, Jacqueline Jones and Nosey Vale's Liam Scott were both victorious in the finals, where there was disappointment for seven other finalists from around the region. Meanwhile, five other boxers from Merseyside and Cheshire will compete in the England Boxing Senior Development Championship quarterfinals this weekend. Tranmere Rovers have signed centre-back Steve McNulty. The 32-year-old Liverpudlian has joined Rovers on loan from Luton Town with a view to a permanent transfer. McNulty brings with him a wealth of experience and a track record of success, having won promotion on four occasions with three different clubs. In local swimming, Lancashire will be seeking to become county champions for the 14th consecutive year this Sunday at Ponds Forge in Sheffield. Several swimmers from the city have been selected, including Southport's Holly Hibbert, who will be joined by teammates Liam Wiggler and Emma Whittington. Alongside them will be Holly White of Everton and Toby Ryland from the City of Liverpool, as well as Crosby Trio, Matthew Pomfort, Lucy Hardy and Anthea Clayson.
That was Kate Hewison with this week's Sport Roundup.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
New jobs are being created with EasyJet. The airline announced a recruitment drive for around 1,200 extra cabin crew and pilots in the next year. The recruitment is also a bid to increase the number of female pilots. There will be job opportunities for both positions at all EasyJet bases across the UK, including Liverpool and Manchester. Next, Liverpool City Centre store have listed more than 100 jobs as the fashion firm prepare for the festive season. The retailer is looking for around 100 sales assistants for the Christmas period and a part-time sales consultant. Next is looking to strengthen staffing levels for December and the turn of the new year. All of the jobs offer around £5 to £7 per hour. Our Liverpool Life reporter Stephen Carson spoke with Kelly Robinson, owner of Trophies for All, a grassroots business from Liverpool, about why people should take the temporary job opportunities.
You never know what's going to happen from a temporary job. Say, for instance, if you know it's, say, 2 days a week, that could then lead to maybe, say, 4 days a week. And then from there, if you do get kept on, you know, you could end up being, like, say, I don't know, supervisor. So really speaking, in my opinion, yes, definitely go for these temporary jobs.
As we enter the final part of this week's show, let's take a look at things to do in Liverpool this week. For some family fun this weekend, get down to Hope Street LTD, which is situated on Lord Street. This is not an office, it's an interactive piece of theatre which allows the audience to follow a monster's footsteps through an office and will help to save some of their favourite storybook characters, including pirates and fairies. Created and delivered by a team of experienced theatre and school facilitators, you will be able to watch your child take part in a piece of professional theatre. Tickets are £2 for adults and £3 for children. If you're interested in some alien activity, the World Museum is putting on a show called We Are Aliens. It looks at how our understanding of life on Earth guides the hunt for alien life elsewhere in the universe. You can go to this show Friday, Saturday and Sunday this week. If you're looking for a fabulous food event, then Camp and Furnace gets transformed every Saturday night into a 200-seater restaurant for Meat Market, central to which is a 10-foot-long barbecue hand-forged by steelworkers in the city. That's been this week's Liverpool Live podcast. I've been your host, Alex Gorton. Make sure to tune into the podcast next week.
This has been the Liverpool Live podcast. Brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.